ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Your inside look into combat sports, brought to you by the WBO, the World Boxing Organization.
Pedro, let me tell you congratulations on your long time in radio, you and your team, and for your ratings, man. I was reading about that. I'm very impressed with you, Pedro.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I don't want to predict this fight, but, you know, I'm going to promise that I can give a good fight, you know, to make people happy, and I just do my best.
Pedro Fernandez.
If I can't teach you one way, I'll teach you another, but I'm going to get the job done.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million-dollar Sports Byline Studio, live on Twitch TV. I'm talking about the Sports Byline USA channel. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide. 35, no, no, make that 36 plus years now of being often imitated but never duplicated. Here I sit, the modest one. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. In this second hour of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, if you are coming to us, listen to us live, of course, the Sunday show, Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. We are for 2 hours on Sunday for live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, like 1,000 other platforms. But this is hour number two of the Sunday show. If you listen to this live, if you listen to it on the podcast, of course, we're always rocking and rolling in anchor.com, the Ring Talk Live Worldwide channel. Fast. Every time you can put a check there, you put a check there at anchor.com, and they will notify you every time a Ring Talk podcast becomes available. You are tuned to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I said that more than once, but can I say, when you are the man, you are the man. We will talk boxing and MMA for the next hour. We're bringing Kamaru Usman, the world welterweight champion. He's a man at 170 pounds, no doubt about that. Of course, last night he turned back, last-minute substitute. Bad dude it is, Jorge Masvidal. But, you know, Masvidal, as tough as he was, as bad as he was, he was coming in at 35-12, and I knew he was leaving the ring at 35-13. Of course, the champion, now 17-1, we'll hear from Usman a little bit later. And we'll bring in a guy that fought everybody, from George Foreman, you name it, he fought everybody. But he also traveled around the world. We'll talk with what it's like to be a career boxer with David Jaco at about 20 minutes past the hour. You are tuned to Ring Talk live, baby, on Sports Byline.
Here comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right, the World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
We have done it! We have a new heavyweight champion in the world!
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Everyone said, I wish I was in your shoe, I wish I was in your shoe. The people, the hundreds of people that wish they were in my shoe, don't know the tenth of it. If they were in my shoe, they would cry like babies.
Let's go back in time. July 10th, 1951, Randy Turpin beat Sugar Ray Leonard, Sugar Ray Robinson, to win the world middleweight title before a sellout crowd, of course, in London, New York. That was his home, London, the UK, that was his home turf. July 12, 1986, Evander Holyfield won his first title. A split decision win over Dwight Cawley for the WBA Cruiserweight title. Man, that was seems like a long time ago. On the same card, my guy from 1984, Steve McCrory. Wow, he lost to Jeff Fennec by a TKO in 14. Straight up, Steve McCrory, a good fighter, Milton McCrory's brother. On the 13th of July, 1980, Matthew Saad Muhammad, born Matthew Franklin, a great guy, stopped Yaki Lopez in the 14th round. Of course, Yaki Lopez from Stockton, California. I see him at boxing meetings, local boxing meetings. Always a gentleman, the most eloquent man you can ever imagine in your life for taking the beatings that he's took, man. I mean, straight up, that guy is like undamaged. He could probably, he is like incredibly articulate. It just blows me away. Anyway, I love having the ability to spend time around Yaki Lopez out of Stockton, California. But he lost to everybody for the title. I mean, he was a guy, if you couldn't beat him, you couldn't beat champion, Yaki Lopez was a gatekeeper back in the late 1970s and early 1980s. And in 1947, get this, the last time I saw Rocky Graziano, you know, that guy that somebody up there likes me, did the movie on him and that kind of good stuff. Last time I saw him, we're in Atlantic City. We're at some Donald Trump event, and we're doing a party on Sugar Ray Robinson. In fact, Millie Robinson was there. I remember talking to Millie, and Rocky Graziano walked by, and I said, "Excuse me, Millie." And I said, "Hey, Rock, can I talk to you? Blah, 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 blah." So I'm following him down the hall with my tape recorder in my hand. This is the way we used to do things back in the day. We had the tape recorder and the microphone. And I'm following him down the hall, and I said, "Can I get an interview?" He goes, "Hey, kid, I can't right now. I gotta go take a squirt. Okay, let me go take a squirt. I'll be right back." I never saw him again. He died a few months later. But the bottom line is, in 1947, he battered Tony Zale in a submission at round six of a fight expected of 15 rounds expected to win the world middleweight championship. Of course, 15,000 people in Chicago Stadium. And back to, of course, Detroit. I forgot to mention this. I did the last Thomas Hearns fight. It was a ring announcer from February 4th, 2006. Of course, Emmanuel Stewart, I was his guy, brought me back to Detroit to do the last fight card at the famed Palace in Auburn Hills. Some of the fighters have fought there. Jimmy Paul, of course, that was Emmanuel's first champion. Of course, the WBO 135-pound champion. What happened there? Of course, Emmanuel bet $625,000 on Jimmy Paul to beat Greg Haugen, and Greg Haugen beat Jimmy Paul like a rag doll. Chris Bird fought there. The Durrell brothers fought there. Tony Tubbs fought there. Tim Witherspoon fought there. Leonzo Barber, of course, that was a guy that I went to China in 1993, and we did the first World WBO light heavyweight title fight. Of course, that was from the brawl at the Wall in Beijing, China. Of course, that was breaking history, man. We hadn't been a fight there since 1949, and the communists take it over Mao Zedong. But Obakar fought there, and Michael Moore fought there, and Mark Breland and Milton McCoy. Bottom line is, I did the last fight there February 4th, 2006, Thomas the Hitman Hearns. Man, that was a good night. Everybody was still alive back then, and it was a wonderful evening. And hey, and Aretha showed up. And that wasn't the fight card where she called me Paige. That was the first time I ever met her. Okay, I got the interviews to meet Aretha Franklin. I was like, oh, freaking out. Anyway, so anyway, then, of course, the second time at Cobo Hall, when I introduced her, I knew, cause Emmanuel ended up telling me somebody that likes you is you're gonna introduce somebody you like or somebody, you know, back and forth, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I was freaking out all day. I couldn't imagine who it was. Then he ended up telling me, I realized it was Aretha Franklin, and she came over to me and said, "Hi, Pedro, how are you?" Lady met me once, like 3 or 4 years earlier when I introduced her, as I said, at the Palace. So now she remembers 3 or 4 years later. Many must have told her. Anyway, but the bottom line, she goes, "Hi, Pedro, how are you?" I was like, blown her out. I was like a noodle. I mean, I was. I was trying to be cool and that kind of good stuff, but hey, this was Aretha Franklin, so that was tough. Anyway, the Palace was destroyed. Cobo Hall was destroyed. They're building newer. They've got a new arena in Las Vegas, so I wish them the best, in Detroit, so I wish them the best for that. 1,000 people were allowed to attend a box show Saturday at the 11,000 seat Mississippi Coast Convention Center in Biloxi, Mississippi. Organizers issued a warning. Entry to this event is at your own risk. What the hell does that mean? It used to be if you went to a fight, the worst thing you had to worry about was maybe somebody throwing a beer bottle and hitting you or something like that if the hometown guy lost. But now you got to worry about you got to sign this thing. If you come in, you're waiving your right to, like, healthy, being healthy? Shouldn't they throw an event that's healthy to begin with? What are they doing throwing things indoors? Indoors are not cool. I don't know what the people in Biloxi, Mississippi, are thinking, but I could tell you this. I remember back in the days when, God, I can't think of his name right now, but the guy that ran the Mississippi Boxing Commission, he used to collect his money in advance in cash. Billy Lyons. I think that was his name, Billy Lyons. He used to collect the money in cash. Never saw an athlete. He came and shook us down. We were part of the promotion. He came and shook us down. He would shake us down before the fight. You know, it was this cost and that cost and this cost and that cost. You know, I think it was his name, Billy Lyons. Anyway, he was an eccentric guy, no doubt about that. But there were fights in Mississippi, and the main event, cruiserweight Deshaun Webster, now 12-3 with 3 draws. Always suspect when guys got a lot of draws. 6 KOs, and Samuel Clarkson battled to a 10-round majority draw. Another draw! Surprise, no. Clarkson was the aggressor and landed the better punches, but the judges scored it 95-95, 95-95, and 96-94. But the bottom line is it was a fight on television, but they're not really fights. They're like exhibitions, and I keep trying to tell people. People say to me, when will we see some real fights? You know, when this pandemic thing clears. You heard Lopez Teofimo saying hour number one that, you know, he hopes to be able to hook up with Lomachenko in an outdoor stadium with limited seating sometime in the fall. We'll see if that happens. Anyway, speaking of the fall, I'm not happy about this at all, because in the fall he'll be officially fighting as a featherweight. I'm talking about WBO Super Bantamweight Champion, the best fighter in all of Mexico right now, Rolando Navarrete Martinez. That's right, Martinez. Once beaten, which is like 35-1, something like that. I mean, incredible record, all kinds of knockouts, the best fighter pound for pound in Mexico, one of the best fighter pound for pound in the entire world of boxing, no doubt about that. And at 122, there were other fights to be made, big fights to be made, and now he's moving to 126, which sort of leads me to believe that he doesn't have the intestinal fortitude that I thought he had, that he doesn't have the confidence in himself that I thought he had, that he doesn't have stones the size of an elephant like I thought he had. Maybe they're like more like akin to a hamster or something like that, because at 122 there was unfinished business for him. But what happened? He's moving to 126. Of course, WBO 126 pound champion Shakur Stevenson, maybe one of the reasons why Navarrete's moving to 126 from 122, is that Stevenson is moving up to 130 pounds. He'll be fighting for the belt in the near future. At the end of the day, Shakur Stevenson may be the best of the bunch there as far as styles are concerned. But Navarrete, the old Mexican boxer, you think, you know, the slugger that was willing to take four or five punches to land one. Not this guy. He's sort of like Pernell Whitaker, always on his toes, always on his feet, moving about, throwing nice combinations. He's tall, he's lanky, he's lean, he's got long arms, decent punching power. But at the end of the day, you got to clean up business at 122. In other words, I didn't move up to 147 and get beat until I beat everybody at 139. You know where I'm coming from? Junior welterweight, you make the move to welterweight, you have cleaned out your division before you move. He never even attempted to clean out division. So this guy I was heralding as the best fighter in all of Mexico, he still may be the best fighter in all of Mexico. But I got to tell you, man, I'm not too happy with the fact he's moving up to 126 pounds so damn quick. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and the American Forces Network. Next up, one of boxing's true gentlemen, David Jaco, on Sports Byline.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
Little bit of East Bay Soul here. That's what they're called, East Bay Soul. That's the band, eastbaysoul.com. Of course, Tower Power co-founder Greg Adams leads this band. Bad dude, Greg Adams. On trumpet, he was supposed to go to like the Julian School of Music. And he said, you know what, I'm going to join Tower Power at 17. He did. And went around the world. More power to Greg Adams. Now, I've been a lot of places in the world. I'm looking into my next guest professional resume. He's been about everywhere in the world. I'm seriously. I'm talking about heavyweight David Jaco. And Dave, I haven't seen you since 1994. How's life treating you?
Life should be good, Pedro.
That's good, man.
I'm living in Bradenton, 4 miles from the Gulf. Semi-retired. I'm doing pretty happy camper right now.
That sounds good, man. You know, when everybody has a different story about China. You met a couple of women over there. I mean, everybody has a different story about China. Is that, well, there was maybe 75 of us over there. Say 75 of us over there. But we all have 75 individual stories, because it was 75. I mean, we all have our own different, every time I run into somebody from China, they've got a different story.
Yeah, it was a pretty, crazy wild trip over there in Macau. And Zhuhai and Guangzhou and Hong Kong, the four cities that me and my friend Raleigh Cotter all got to visit for a little bit. And I've never seen so many people. It's unbelievable, the population of China. It's incredible.
No, yeah. Did you go over there twice with us? Did you go over for the PR tour and for the fight itself?
No, I didn't make it that first trip to Beijing. My manager Rick Connie was there. Rickon with Harold Smith the first time, but I only went to that trip when I fought David Bale around the car with that Chinese heavyweight that was supposed to be so great, knocked his last 100 opponents out.
Dave, I tell you,
a lot of trouble for us.
Yeah, Dave, I've told the story on the radio real quick. We had this guy, this Chinese guy, we'll call him Joe Lee, and I don't remember his name. And they didn't even put his name in the Box Rec record books. So anyway, he's gonna have his professional debut, he's a Kung Fu King, he's supposed to be killing everybody, and they assigned me to go running with him. But he doesn't want to go running, instead we go eat breakfast, and I counted him, Dave, he put 47 strips of bacon on his plate. I was freaking out! I mean, come on! 47, I counted them! 47 pieces of bacon! So anyway, this guy's obviously not a dedicated athlete. This is good.
He looked in the first thing. I just don't know where I could have got it.
Yeah, and of course,
this story about him. For another friend of mine who's involved to read a lot of books, he said they had him in a magazine and he supposedly knocked his last 100 opponents out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
I mean,
what he
was. Him up and, you know, and then what happened, we got to fight and it was the craziest thing I ever seen come down.
Well, it's because
they come up with.
It's because it was a fixed fight, and I didn't know the fight was fixed, but Harold knew it because Harold put him in with that professional wrestler.
Exactly, guy just lost 150 pounds.
Yeah, something like that.
10 seconds, skin hanging on him.
What about that riot afterwards? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got out of there, man. I don't want to get involved. I'll tell you, Pedro, I was just so afraid they were going to take our passport. I'll tell that guy, you know, I don't know if you know about, but that guy we're talking about, the Chinese heavyweight.
Yeah.
He's never been found.
He's never been found?
He's been missing since that show.
You know what? I hate to say it, but he brought that on himself. But Dave, you know, I'm a bit of an anal guy, you know what I'm saying? But I'm looking at this guy's plate, and I'm counting the strips of bacon on his plate because I'm freaking out. I don't eat bacon, and I sure wouldn't want my fighter eating a whole lot of bacon, if any at all. And he's got 47 strips of it, and I tried to pull the plate away from him. You know, no. And that didn't work out too well either. Because I think he was offended. Anyway, so I told Harold, I can't babysit this guy. That's what they assigned me to babysit him. I couldn't babysit him.
Well, he came up. Harold wanted Rick County, my man, to be the main trainer. So he came up to the gym in Macau there. And we got in the ring. And he came out for first 15, 20 seconds throwing some steam on some punches. And I started firing him up pretty good. I lit him up pretty good. I seen legs a little wobbly and that, but Rick County stopped him sparring, called me to the side, said, Dave, don't hurt this guy, whatever you do. Take it easy on him, you know, don't work him over. So I did hold back a little bit on him, which I was only trying to spar anyway, but he was coming there, impress people, you know, whether they're Chinese reporters.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he come in there like he's a wild man. And I thought, well, this guy wants to mix it up. I started lighting him up a little bit. That's when Rick County called me over and told me not to be firing him up too bad.
Is Rick Conti still alive?
Rick's doing real good. He just moved from Sarasota. Unfortunately, sad news, Rick lost his wife from breast cancer.
I'm sorry
to hear that.
He's
married to for over 40 years, yeah. That was his life. He never had no kids, so that was his life. So he ain't got no relatives there. So okay. He moved out to where his sister and where his nephew and his wife live in Clearwater. Rick moved to Clearwater.
Okay.
So he's living in Clearwater now.
Heavyweight David Jacobs, our guest, folks. He's fought guys like Mike Tyson and George Foreman. How do you get into the ring with Mike Tyson? I'm going to tell you the truth. And I'm not trying to put anybody down on this one, but Alex Stewart sort of had a wet fart, if you know what I'm talking about, in the ring.
Yeah.
When he was standing there with Mike Tyson, he sort of spit on himself, but spit with an H. How do you stand there against Mike Tyson and realize he's coming at you? You did it. How do you do that?
It's pretty easy. You know, if you do it, Tyson was my 22nd fight. I was 19-3. 23rd fight, but I know he'd be good. That month I fought him, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated about being predicted to be Floyd Patterson's mark for being the youngest heavyweight champion.
Wow.
So I knew he was south. So when I got there, went to Wayne to New York, I got to say, I tell you, how you doing, blah, blah. We didn't say much each other. He went by, but I knew he meant business. And the thing was, the word got out at the fight there in Albany that there was Showtime and HBO reps in the audience because Mike's adopted father, everybody knows, Cus D'Amato, died in November. And this was going to be his first fight in January, a couple months after he passed. So they want to know if this was psychologically bother Mike, change him any in fighting. So there were a lot of people in the audience, and Mike got wind of that. And, you know, I had all plans to try to box him, but I had no choice. I had to start throwing punches. He come out like a Tasmanian devil throwing to me right from the get. You seen the fight, haven't you, Pedro?
Yeah, I saw it. And, you know,
I'll tell you.
Dave.
I didn't fight. When he hit me, I didn't fight. And I went with it. I was just fighting the punches.
Dave, you got bigger stones than me. Let me tell you, I was supposed to fight Zach Padilla, the future world champion, at an amateur boxing tournament in Northern California in 1984. So I went and got some films of the guy. They tell me, yeah, he throws 180 punches in 180 seconds. Like, oh, that's impossible. Nobody could do that. But he did. He threw 173 punches in 180 seconds. So I said to myself, there's no way in the world I'm going to beat this guy. So I backed out of that fight. But you know, you went in there with some monsters. George Foreman, Mike Weaver, are going to say that.
Hey, Pedro, they say fighters don't have good memories. Ask me who I fought. I can name 18 top names of contenders and champions off the top of my head.
Yeah.
I have a memory like a block of steel, my long memory.
You know, and you beat undefeated Razor Ruddock. And people don't realize that Razor Ruddock was undefeated, and you whooped him. You stopped him.
And I also went 10 rounds with the guy knocked Tyson out, Buster Douglas and Stitches in Vegas. And I also went to this with Oliver the Bull McCall, the first man to stop Lennox Lewis. So no matter what people want to say, I was a pook or what, I was a pretty good journeyman, you know what I'm saying?
Who hit the hardest?
That's why them guys gave me them fights, because they know I didn't quit and lay down. I fought till I couldn't get up anymore, till I got stopped, you know. I didn't quit for nobody.
Well, Dave, we knew that. I mean, there was never a question of the size of your sack down there, your stones. I mean, they were like basketballs. We all knew that. There was no doubt about that. And to step into the ring with the guys that you stepped in the ring with is just commendable. There's no doubt about that. But who hit the hardest?
I had to say George Foreman when I fought him. He was on his comeback in 88. I fought him in Bakersfield, California. And George came with I had a lot of plan. I had my fight plan for Big George. I just do that at least, stay away from, you know, take him 5-6 rounds, get him a little tired down, and I was going to do something, try, you know, we're coming on to him, and about a shit. Toward the first round, George sees me, I'm moving, so he comes in quick with a haymaker right hand, and I'm waiting to catch on the side of my body. He comes right around the back, hits me right above on the spine, right above my ass bone. And it was everything. 300-pound haymaker was. And I went up from the waist down. I went down on my knees. The referee came over and started counting. And I asked him, I said, you going to warn him? You can't in the back. And he told me, I can't do nothing.
Interesting. Dave, we thank you so much for spending some time with us on Ring Talk Live Worldwide. We'd like to have you back real soon. Please stay healthy.
Thanks, Pedro. You too. Good talking to you. And have a good year.
Dave Jaco on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
comes the decision now. Let's listen.
Clarity in the world of professional boxing is spelled WBO. That's right. The World Boxing Organization is boxing's only transparent sanctioned body. You can follow the WBO on Facebook or check out their website, WBOboxing.com. That's WBOboxing.com. The World Boxing Organization.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Woo! Let that guitar roll a little bit. We used to say this was New Tower of Power, but this was 2 years ago on the Soul Side of Town, a year and a half ago. They got another album out. I kid you not. Check it out. Tower of Power's got two LPs out in less than 2 years at towerofpower.com. Emilio, you're welcome. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA, of course. UFC rocking and rolling last night. The main event, of course, coming to us from Fight Island in Dubai, which is a piss hole if you ever want to go somewhere. It's not Dubai. Anyway, Jorge Masvidal, of course, was the loser via a five-round decision. The judges were pretty decisive, and it was a rout. Now, 17-1, he hasn't lost a fight since 2013, is the world welterweight champion, Kamaru Usman.
Clean sweep on two of the three judges' scorecards. You got to feel pretty good about this win, man.
I mean, I feel great about it because that's the thing about Jorge Masvidal. He was the biggest, baddest dude out there, and he comes with an army. And when I say army, I don't mean just people with him, but he comes with that whole aura, that whole energy, and I felt it all week,
right?
All month, the last 6 months to where this fight was supposed to be made. You know, I felt it. He was a big, bad dude. He was tough, and then having to make the mental switch on 6 days' notice, it was a tough one. But, you know, that's what I do best. When the going gets tough, I get going.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, a lot of credit was given to Jorge for taking it on 6 days' notice. But as you said, for you to do that, to switch it up a completely different style when the stakes are so high, when the belt is on the line, something you've worked so hard for, to still accept that, I mean, you deserve a lot of credit. Did anything about this week frustrate you?
No, I wouldn't say frustrated me because this is when you're champion, you have to be able to do it at the drop of a dime. And, you know, just kind of watching some of the great champions from the past, from different sports and different just athletic events. This is what champions are made of, being able to make that switch and still go out there and rise to the occasion. And George is a tough dude. Like, we all knew that. We knew he was a gamer, and he showed it tonight. You know, he didn't break. He stayed in the fight. He kept fighting. You know, there was a couple of moments where I was just testing him. I was hitting him to the body just to kind of test his will and see where he's at. But he never wanted out. He stayed in there. And, you know, but I did what I did best, and that's dominate.
This was a most unusual fight week for you. I don't think a lot of people realize you were in Vegas, then went to Dallas. And you got here pretty late, had to quarantine. How was the whole week compared to a normal fight week in the UFC for you?
It was tough. It was very, very challenging because you have to be able to, like, I'm in Vegas. Everything is on point. I'm preparing for a completely different opponent, different game plan, and fights off. And as a fighter, Mike, you can attest to this. You know, once you sign a contract, mentally, you're turned on.
Oh, yeah.
You're preparing for that fight. And then they tell you fights off. Okay, you turn it off.
I heard, you know, the story. You cracked a beer for the first time in 10 months.
Yes, I'm literally at the airport, and I'm screwing off the top of the beer. I get a call. My manager's like, I think we got to fight. I'm like, well, there goes that beer. Close it back on. I gave it to someone, and I took off. And having to make that switch and knowing that I had put on 8 pounds that night before,
wow,
I had to get to work and get that weight off and then go back to Vegas, get quarantined, and then fly over here, quarantine for 48 hours on top of the time switch. That was one of the biggest things is trying to stay mentally in the zone and gauge the time to where you were going to fight and how to come out. And it was a tough week, but, you know, I had to come out and still rise to the occasion and do my job.
Yeah, sorry, John. Go ahead.
No, Michael.
Please.
You're in the Hall of Fame. Take it away.
Jeez, I thought we were going to take the tie here. No, listen, as you said, the time change, flying to Abu Dhabi, you know, it's not like you were here for weeks with a lot of time to adjust. And I'm not sure if a lot of people at home realize how hard that was just to completely change your sleep schedule. Then to have another opponent, a guy that's dangerous, that's fast, that's slick, that actually came in really good conditioning considering that he took it on 6 days' notice. Is there anything about the fight that surprised you?
I mentally, I wasn't surprised because everyone's saying, oh, he took the fight on 6 days' notice, but Masvidal has only one guy to prepare for.
Yeah.
You know, he
yeah.
was sitting at a position to where this was the only fight for him.
Right.
And the only reason this fight wasn't made earlier is because he was going through some contractual obligations, some contractual things. That was the only reason. He's training for just me.
Right.
And so everyone's like, he took the fight on 6 days' notice. Well, I'm the only guy he's been training for.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know,
yep,
I'm the one who had to make the mental switch after preparing for a completely different guy, different style, and have to, you know, now mentally focus on Masvidal. And it didn't surprise me. I knew he was going to be tough. And everyone's like, oh, he might be out of shape. No, I knew he was in
right,
shape.
Right.
Like, even Dustin Poirier said he did all of his camp. And there was a couple of other guys that were training for fights that he was in their camps as well. So I knew he was going to be prepared. Jorge Masvidal is a dog. I we've always known that. And, you know, I had to go out there and just kind of outclass him tonight.
You know, when you take fights on the last minute or at last minute notice, I mean, virtually at the last minute, let me tell you a little experience I had in 1984. It was May of 1984. I lose a decision to Vincent Webb. He was ranked number 9 in the country. And I lose a decision to him in the Western Olympic Trials, in 1984 Olympic Trials over there in Colorado Springs. So I come home. I'm not too happy about that. But then again, you know, I wasn't battered. I wasn't stopped, anything like that. I hung with a world-class guy for 3 rounds. Anyway, at the end of the day, I learned a little bit from that fight that, you know, Vincent takes well to the body. That's all I can say. I hit him to the body so many times you wouldn't believe it. Anyway, so I lose the decision, and I come home, and they tell me, we want you to main event the Menudo Festival. I said, what the hell's a Menudo Festival? He goes, well, it's this festival we hold in Contra Costa County in Livermore, I think at Pleasant, at the county fair, and thousands of people are going to show up. So we want you to be in the main event, blah, blah, blah. This is Otis Grimble, the Golden Glove Association president. He's a Sacramento cop that committed suicide later in life. Anyway, he runs this big con down on me because I just got home from Colorado Springs. I don't want to be fighting in a couple of weeks. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm tired. I've been training my ass off for a year and a half, straight up. Anyway, so I say, okay, I'll take the fight. So he says it's going to be at 147 pounds. I said, you know, I don't like fighting that big. You know, why don't you bring him down to like, get me a guy at 42 or 43, somewhere around there. He said, no, no, it's going to be fight 147, and you're going to fight this guy that's Baba from Fort Ord or something like that. The guy was in the Army. I said, okay, Army guys are always tough, but they can't fight too well. They get into the boxing team because they don't want to do the Army work. That's usually how these guys end up being on the boxing team as far as the military is concerned. So anyway, so they tell me that the fight is off. The day before, the fight is off. They call me like, I guess about 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm starting to dry out a little bit. I'm, you know, I'm thinking about having to make the exact poundage and this kind of stuff, because I think I was like 148. I'm thinking about 148 for 7 the next morning, because we got to weigh in that morning. And I'm thinking about the weight this net, so I get a phone call that the fight is off. It's done. He ain't coming. The guy from Fort Ord ain't coming, and that's all there is to it. So I said, yeah, right on, blah, 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 so cool. So I go out that night, and I see a girlfriend of mine, and we spend some intimate time together, you know, breaking those rules that you're supposed to, like, follow as a fighter in training, right? So I break that rule. So anyway, she takes me to the Pepper Mill here in Daly City. We had a couple cocktails besides the in front of the fireplace there. So, you know, I'm cool. So I roll to the fights the next day. The very next day, I'm rolling to the Menudo Festival, and I'm not fighting again, right? But Lenny Albert is fighting, and I'm going to corner him. So I'm going with him. Chris Gomez is there. My trainer's going to be there. So anyway, I get to the arena, and I'm pretty loose. I think we smoked some weed in the car on the way over. I mean, we're having a great time, right? And Otis says to me, Pedro, the main event fell out. I want you to do the main event. I said, I'm not ready to fight, man. And I explained it to him. I said, I don't think I even have my trunks. I think I had trunks and shoes in the car. But I said, I don't even think I have my trunks, blah, blah, blah. He says, oh, we'll get you a pair of trunks, this and that, but I need you in the main event. I said, against who? He says, well, there's this guy from Fort Ord, another guy, not the guy that you were supposed to fight, this other guy, the B guy on the team. I said, so I was fighting the A guy in the 147-pound Fort Ord team, and he pulled out, so now I'm going to fight the B guy at welterweight. Yeah, according, yeah, right. Anyway, so I'm telling him no. I mean, you know, come on, man, no, 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 no. So he kept on me for about 15 or 20 minutes. Finally, I think he challenged my manhood or something like that, and the macho in me came out, and I said, okay, I'll fight him. So, you know, went to the car and got my stuff and came back and this and that, and you know, and they told me, I said, oh, this is how they called me into the fight. They said, we're going to have 2-minute rounds instead of 3-minute rounds. Because we were 3-minute rounds, I was an open fighter. Okay, so open fighters fight 3-minute rounds. Okay, junior fighters and special seniors and that kind of good stuff, you get to fight 2-minute rounds or less. Anyway, So they told me it was going to be a 2-minute round. So anyway, we're standing in the center of the ring, and they go, this is the main event of the Manila Festival, 3 rounds, 3-minute rounds. And I look over at Otis like, hey, man, you just told me it was going to be a 2-minute round. Anyway, it was a 3-minute round, so I knew right then and there that, you know, maybe I had bitten off too much because I'm looking at this guy, and he's like 6'2". He is tall and lanky. I'm going to have to throw overhand all day just to catch him, okay? So anyway, we go into the scrap, and I'm tired during the referee's instructions. I kid you not. I'm like gassed out in the first round, looking like an asthmatic in need of an oxygen tank. I mean, I'm freaking out. I'm losing this fight, man. I'm losing this fight against a guy. If I was focused, if I was together, I'd lick him like a stamp. He's mechanically inferior to me, okay? Something's wrong with me. Obviously, I'm not together. Anyway, the second round, I clip one of those overhand rights, and I open up a cut on the eye, and I'm dying. I'm just dying. I don't think I've ever been that tired in a boxing match. Anyway, it's out there in the sun. The sun was beating down on us. It was in the 80s, as I said, May of 1984. Anyway, I cut him up on that one right-hand lead that I caught him with real clean, and I cut him above the eye, and I realized he's cut. So I let the blood cut bleed just a little bit, and then I scream at the referee, he's cut! He's cut! And what does the referee do? The referee does exactly what I expected him to do. He jumps in, looks at the guy, pulls in the doctor, stops the fight. I win via TKO. Had that fight went any further, oh, man, I'd have got licked like a stamp, no doubt about it. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking at the world of boxing and MMA. We'll go to a break in a few minutes, of course, but this is the Sunday edition, 11 a.m. Pacific time. A boxing card took place Saturday night at a drive-in theater in Dusseldorf, Germany. I kid you not. Fans watch the fights from their vehicles, with the action also being seen on 2 big screens. That's sort of cool. In the main event, super welterweight, 154 pounds, Ahmad El Masosui is now 33-3-1 with 8 KOs. I guess he can't punch. Scored a second round TKO over Sergey Wachtsai, 14-5-1 with 7 KOs. What did I say? He couldn't punch. 8 KOs in 40 fights, and he knocks this guy out in the second round. Something smelled there. A barrage of punches stopped the referees, brought in the referee stoppage. The time was 1:54 of the round. Anyway, also unbeaten unheavyweight James Kraft, now 18 and zip with a draw and 9 KOs, escaped with a 6-round split decision over Kirill Horshnik. Horshnik came in at 17-13. You know, that probably should have been a draw or a Horshnik's fight. Horshnik's one of those guys like Dave Jaco. He shows up, and on occasion, he wins the big fights, but they don't give them to him. Anyway, the judges were split on that one. The boxing buzz, ESPN is going to announce it. The bout that's been canceled twice between the WBC and WBO super lightweight champion, 140-pound champion, Victor Jose Ramirez and Victor Postel, will take place at the end of August. They don't have a date or a site, but I guess they're going to be doing that in Las Vegas at that little top-ranked studio they got going on. Of course, the network also said that the WBO light heavyweight eliminator between Eladir Alvarez, the former champion, and Joe Smith Jr., talk about a guy with a common name, is rescheduled for the third week of August. They were to clash in August and July, but of course Alvarez suffered a shoulder injury. And bottom line is, you know, boxing's happening. They just had this WBA convention, the World of Bunko and Anarchy, of course, down there in their headquarters in Venezuela. But the bottom line is they just had a virtual convention online. And, of course, I don't know what they got done, but it seemed to be well attended. And everybody seemed to be getting into this virtual thing, virtual boxing. You know, you're going to have to face the reality. That's what it's going to be like. Virtual boxing. We're going to be watching boxing on television. We're not going to be in any arenas anytime soon. And I think for those of you that want to push big fights in big arenas, I think you're pushing possible tragedy, man. I mean, why get sick to see a fight? Come on. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Darkest of night with the moon shining bright. There's a set going strong, a lot of things going on. The man of the hour has an air of great power. The dudes have envied him for so long. Oh.
the 90s, there was a riot broke out at the Richmond Auditorium in a fight card. And, of course, I grabbed the microphone and I quelled a riot by screaming at the crowd, okay? Well, I wasn't able to do that in Macau because they didn't understand English. You know where I'm coming from? So, Dave Jacob, we're talking about that riot, of course, took place in Macau after the Chinese phenom. It was supposed to be 100-0. He had knocked out 100 straight guys. He couldn't lick a stamp. All he did was eat 47 strips of bacon in front of me. Anyway, he gets beat up by this wrestler, knocked out in the very, where the wrestler takes a dive in the very first round. It looks like an obvious dive. I mean, the riot begins. What did I do? I got the ring card girls out of there, right, Cuddy? That's what I was supposed to do. Yeah, I got the girls across the street. Bottom line is, got to save the women, man. And at the end of the day, the cops came, I remember, afterwards and questioned me, and they were talking about holding passports and that kind of good stuff, you know. And we didn't have nothing to do with the Chinese guy. We couldn't help with the Chinese guy. I couldn't fight it, couldn't lick a stamp. But, you know, Harold shouldn't have put him on a card. It was all about people coming out to see this Chinese guy, and he was the biggest fraud in the history of combat sports. I kid you not. This has been Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the Sunday edition, of course, of Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Comes to you every Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 211, and about 1,000 other internet platforms. And also, of course, as well, we come to you on podcasts. All these shows are on podcasts. This Sunday show should be up on the podcast at anchor.com, Ring Talk Live Worldwide podcast at anchor.com. You join that podcast, you click on it, and guess what? They will tell you every time the show comes up, and we have 3 hours of Ring Talk Live Worldwide each and every week to bring you. You know, there's a million things you could be doing right now. The fact you listen to Ring Talk Live coming to you from the Sports Byline Studios, well, my name is Pedro Fernandez, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart. On behalf of Scott Cuddy, the executive producer, everybody here at Sports Byline, stay healthy. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide.